It's the Famous Monsters Podcast, the official podcast of Famous Monsters of Filmland Magazine.
Welcome to the Famous Monsters Podcast, the official podcast of Forrest J. Ackerman's classic magazine that started it all back in 1958. Often imitated, never duplicated, we are more than just monsters. We cover sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and all kinds of genre pop culture, living up to Forrest's classic roots while staying current and ahead of the curve. I'm David Weiner, editor of Famous Monsters, and with me today on the podcast is Caroline Stevenson, Famous Monsters Media and Promotions Manager.
Hello!
George Marrero, FM's Jack of All Trades and Resident Artist.
Hello.
Producing the podcast is FM's Cameron Hathaway. And our special guest today is the guy who keeps it all together. It's Phil Kim, the publisher of Famous Monsters Magazine.
You're all fired.
All right. Wait, is Donald Trump in here or is it Phil Kim?
We're going to build a wall somewhere in this office.
Okay, there we go.
We're just politics right off the bat. Yeah. Jeez, guys.
You now have a very unique insight into the lunches at Famous Monsters Podcast when Phil likes to talk about everything that is ultimately prodding the hornet's nest. He likes to keep things interesting, definitely. Yes. But today, actually, other than politics, we are here to talk about a very exciting event that we are holding the first weekend in March up in Santa Rosa, California. It's the Silver Scream Festival. Yes, film, horror, sci-fi, and wine. Yes. It's going to be really a wonderful event. We have a lot of special guests. It's a film festival. And yes, did I mention the wine part? We're going to be having some wine. The FM crew is going to be up there, and we're very excited. March 4th through 6th, Friday through Sunday, to be there. Phil, you're here to talk about this. What can you tell about the origins of this wonderful event and what we can expect?
Origin story.
Okay, so long time ago.
In a theater far, far away.
No, so when I was producing independent films way back when, I met a friend at the Santa Rosa Booking Agency for theaters. They were booking independent films and regular movies for 250 theaters. And so since I live in Sonoma County, I had asked them to screen my film, and they were very kind, and they did, and we ended up becoming friends because, well, one of the reasons why they were so open to doing this is two of them were very very big fans of Famous Monsters growing up. So Famous Monsters has just been nothing but a well of connections and goodwill for all those people who had grown up with FM. So Neil Perlmutter, who is the vice president of Santa Rosa Entertainment Group, which owns multiple theaters around California, had said, "Hey, you know, I love horror movies. I used to, you know, when I was in school, I used to wear, you know, Freddy's basically sweater." And and he was like going, he's like, "I was a very quiet kid." I'm like, "It sounds like something that you would describe, like Ted Kaczynski."
You know, so, there you go.
He seemed like such a nice kid. No, and so he said, you know, but he loved horror films, and it horrified his, you know, parents, because they're like, "What is wrong with my son?" So anyway, he, you know, like all of us who were very, very into this stuff.
Horror is therapeutic, by the way.
Yes. It's cathartic sometimes.
Yes. No.
Neil and I started talking, and, you know, you say a lot of things over a dinner conversation that don't necessarily happen. Well, this one did. So this was in 2010. By 2012, Neil had started something called the Cult Movie Classics. Mm-hmm. And every month, he would play a classic horror. And he would invite Famous Monsters, and we would do quizzes, and we would give out hats and lanyards and T-shirts. And it's kind of grown into quite a thing. And about 18 months ago, we were having another conversation, and he said, "Hey, you still interested in doing that film festival thing?" I said, "Sure." And, you know, a lot of times how these things evolve are like, you want to do them, but then you kind of lapse in memory about like how many other things you have in front of you. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of takes a catalyst of somebody who doesn't understand or doesn't even sympathize with your workload to say, we're going to do this. And sure. So we kind of did that to each other. And 18 months later, we have this event.
It's amazing because there's so many people who are involved in this who are quality people in the industry. I mean, this is really Hollywood going up to wine country. And it's amazing. I'm just going to, if you go to silverscreamfest.com, you can get all the details about our guests and who's going to be involved and what we're going to be showing. And we're going to have a schedule for all of the films, whether it's the entries or the special screenings with Q&As and panels that go with them. But just to give you an idea of the talent and the wonderful names that we've rounded up. I know I'm gonna list the first one that I know Caroline is a big fan of, being a werewolf fan.
What? Me?
Yeah, you, a little bit. An American Werewolf in London is celebrating its 35th anniversary. If you have the current issue of Famous Monsters number 284, you will see American Werewolf is on the subscriber cover. That's right. Painted by Oscar winner Rick Baker, who created the actual werewolf in American Werewolf in John Landis's 81 horror classic. Well, not only is Rick Baker going to be up there, but John Landis is going to be up there. And not only is John Landis going to be up there, but the star of the movie, David Naughton, is going to be up there.
It's my dream come true.
That's not bad. And so they're going to come up and they're going to drink some wine, and maybe that'll loosen some lips to sink some ships and tell some tall tales, if not some real ones, about the making of that film. And I think that's pretty spectacular. Before we go into some of the other guests, how did we land these illustrious individuals, Phil?
Well, we land this.
How did we land this then?
Yeah. No, so...
He's here all week. Try
to don't do. So... initially a lot of these shows always kind of, I mean, maybe this is too much inside baseball, but I will say that when you start these, events, you have a wish list, and then you actually move forward with the event on that wish list and then just pray to anybody that those wish lists actually become real.
The old gods and the new.
Right. So it's kind of like making a stone soup. Is everybody familiar with stone soup?
Stone soup.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it's like that. So so basically,
you make it.
Exactly. So basically, you know, I reached out to Rick, and he said he would like to support it, because he likes FM. He loves FM, actually. And he said he'd like to support it. And he asked, is his friend John Landis going to be there? So I reached out to John, and after a few tries, John said, look, I'm busy, but I would love to attend and help FM out and be who doesn't want to be in Sonoma County? So I said, great. So we got them committed, and once we had them committed, we were able to reach out to David Naughton and say, hey, you know, your two former bosses are going to be at the show, and his representation said that sounds lovely, and they jumped in.
Yeah.
And then we reached out to Wes Craven's people. I hate to say one's a legend, because it's just, there's just so many producers and directors in the 80s that just made such a impact in our genre, right? Mm-hmm. So, Wes Craven had passed on, and so we wanted to give him our respect.
Yeah, we wanted to pay tribute. We wanted to have a panel at the very least to pay tribute, and we thought about what are the great Wes Craven films that we could represent here. And, the first ones that come to mind, obviously, are the big franchises, Nightmare on Elm Street franchise and the Scream franchise. And so... It's kind of a domino effect, it seems, with this event, because once you get one person, they say, oh, well, maybe I'll ask my friend, and then they bring another person.
Oh, absolutely.
And these names are stellar. And so we have Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger himself.
Woo!
And we've got Heather Langenkamp,
who, whoop, whoop.
Nancy from the Nightmare on Elm Street films.
Hello, Caroline.
She's in three films, including... Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which we're going to be screening in addition to the original Nightmare on Elm Street, which is a very cool film to watch and then have them discuss, because it really does It stars the actors as themselves within the context of the Nightmare on Elm Street world. So you have Freddy Krueger, but you also have Heather playing Heather, and you have Robert playing Robert, and you have Wes Craven playing Wes Craven.
Very meta.
Yeah, it is very meta. It was kind of meta before meta. Anyone knew what meta was. And before anyone met a meta, it was meta. And what's also cool is that Marianne Madalena is also going to be coming. And she is a producer of multiple Wes Craven films, multiple Scream films, a bunch of his stuff, including actually the Scream show that was on MTV.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and so she's going to be telling some wonderful tales as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then, of course, we have the Lugosi family. Lugosi Enterprises will come out to honor their grandfather. Father, grandfather's legacy.
Bela Lugosi Jr.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have a wonderful relationship with them. At CaptainCo.com, you can get some cool Lugosi merchandise, and we have a wonderful relationship with them. And, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, we know these people, but it also happens to be the 85th anniversary of the original 1931 Dracula starring Bela Lugosi. And so to have his son, Bela Lugosi Jr., to come up and talk about his legendary, iconic grandfather and tell a couple tales about their relationship and his perspective of him.
His father. Bella's,
what did I say? Bella, grandfather? Yeah. Yes.
No.
Yes, exactly. Well, his Bela's granddaughter going to be there as
That's
well.
Right. Absolutely.
There
so, yeah. Exactly. So we have a great lineup, and I don't want to tell you who it is because I don't want to. But
tell us.
Somebody, several very well-known people in music and in film had requested to just come hang out as
because they're all fans.
Guests. Yeah, they're all fans. They're absolutely. All fans. And I said, of course. You know, I said, wait, I have to check to see if I have any tickets left. I'll get back to you.
Going fast.
Yeah. So we you know, more than the lineup that we show online, you will see other celebrities walking around, watching movies. And
let's just say that there's going to be a lot of cool tattoos, a lot of sleeves, a lot of hands that have played some amazing instruments that you probably own the recording of. And so, and we have some other folks.
It's not George. George will be there too.
I will.
Yeah.
George is very talented, yeah. But then again, he's the master of trades. Master. See, that signals the trades. End of the podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
David's losing
too
it.
Much wine.
I cannot speak, and I haven't had any wine yet. Jack of all trades, master of some.
Master of disaster.
It's going to be pretty cool. We've got among the things, in addition to the movies that are going to be shown and the panels that we're going to have and the competition, we're also going to have a whole comic book element. Tell me about that, Phil.
Oh, so yes, we here at Famous Monsters have a sister company called American Gothic Press. I so love Famous Monsters. But also to be able to tell stories that are narrative and fiction and basically what Forrest Jackman spent his whole life doing.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, a quick aside, if you look at a lot of the original issues of Famous Monsters, they ran some comics. And, of course, he created Vampirella, correct?
Yes.
With Frank Frazetta.
Mm. With Frank Frazetta, young Frank.
This comic book element is something that when we were calling for people, George, how did it work exactly? When we were calling for entries, I know we asked for films, short films and feature films. And
also graphic novels.
Graphic novels.
Yeah. And conceptual art and scripts.
And scripts, regular, good old-fashioned Hollywood screenplays.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this, Phil? Why would we take the time to sift through all this content?
So Famous Monsters of Filmland and its in its inception was really, and you know, I'm sure that they thought of this. I mean, I'd never had a conversation with Forrey when he was alive about the genesis and why exactly, what was the inner monologue to create Famous Monsters. But I do believe from their works and evidence of, you know, people in the industry like Rick Baker and Peter Jackson and all the greats who continually give compliments to FM and how FM was a part of their youth to kind of mold them into the great filmmakers that they are. So right. I really felt like, you know, not just me, but everybody in the office really felt like, you know, a film festival or convention that Famous Monsters puts on really should have that spirit. And part of that is to educate people. You know, I remember when I was trying to break into film, I wish there was somebody who would have told me all the things not to do. and you know, all the, you know, perhaps even fantasies or conventions that I had in my mind of how something might be that wasn't. And I think that if we could give this generation of filmmakers and storytellers kind of a, you know, simple tools through through panels and through interviews and you know, face to face with some of the industry giants, mm-hmm. It may help them. I mean, we would like to foster the next John Landis, the next, you know, Spielberg, the next John Carpenter. I would feel very, very honored, and I would feel like I'm somewhat doing my job as an FM publisher that, you know, to foster young talent.
Absolutely. I think that's great. And what's wonderful about that is, you know, we have these wonderful stories that are sci-fi, fantasy, horror, that we're constantly expanding with American Gothic Press. Some of the guests that are going to be coming who have a foot in that industry, one of them is Derek Robertson.
Yep, Derek Robertson. He is he's an amazing artist. If you knew about his, you know, he was not a professional, how would I say it? He's, of course, a professional artist, but he was not a trained artist. Mm-hmm. He literally just liked drawing, picked it up, and just worked really hard to become one of the best artists out there. I mean, obviously, you have to have some propensity or knack for that sort of thing.
Well, Marvel and DC and Vertigo thinks that he's worthwhile. He's worked for them. And
oh, those small companies?
Yeah, yes, those yes. little companies there. He did he's the co-creator of Transmetropolitan and The Boys. Transmetropolitan was with Warren Ellis. The Boys was with Garth Ennis. And Happy he did with Grant Morrison. And, I mean, he's been in the industry for 20 years, and he definitely has the street cred. And I think it's wonderful that he's going to be coming and kind of representing that element for the fest. Who are some of the other guests? I know we have a cover artist who did an amazing cover for FM 283. We did two Star Wars covers. One was Terry Wolfinger, who did The Force Awakens, and one was Rob Pryor.
Yep. Get them on CaptainCo.com.
tell us about our Rob Pryor connection.
Well, Rob Pryor, I met.
He did an original trilogy image, by the way.
Yes,
the cover.
Yes. 283.
Yes.
Well, Rob and I, we met at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, and through somebody we mutually knew, and he said, hey, I got, you know, I mean, Rob is an amazing artist who is always touring, and I'll explain why he's, like, all artists that we use are amazing, but I'll kind of describe, like, what his particularities are in a minute. But he, you know, we met, and he showed me his stuff, and I was blown away. I said, wow, this is really good stuff. And he said, can we do a cover together? I said, absolutely. So he went, you know, we moved towards doing that, and then I realized who he was. When you look at some of, you know, like Tech N9ne, some of the big concerts, and you see an artist in spotlight ambidextrously painting with two brushes while he's jumping up and down with the music on like a gigantic 8-foot tall canvas, that's him. he can paint ambidextrously and at a speed that I have never seen.
That's amazing. I mean, he does live paintings. That he does that for Disney, Lucasfilm. He's done some great Star Wars images. He's done some great Game of Thrones things. And he was a storyboardist for Buffy the Vampire Slayer mm-hmm. at one point, I believe. But
oh, wow, I didn't know that. That's
what's cool. What's amazing is that you know, you see this wonderful art, but there's only so much appreciation when, you know, you just see the final cut, so to speak, and you're saying, wow, that's wonderful. Obviously, he's a talented artist, but it's a whole different dynamic when you get to see him perform, so to speak, live.
Absolutely.
And we're going to get to see him perform live at the Silver Screen Fest. He's going to be, what, in the lobby painting a picture of you nude? Is that it? Is that...
Half nude.
Okay.
Half
nude. All right.
It,
tastefully
it is,
done.
It is Santa Rosa.
With grapes,
so
grapes and fig leaves.
Grapes and fig leaves.
And a bottle of wine, a goblet.
I guess thought this was a family event.
Wait, if our audience is still
I'm
here,
half
let's
horse.
Tell the real truth.
Get it?
That's a centaur. Okay.
More dad puns.
So do we even know at this point what he's going to be painting? That's a well-kept
secret. It's a secret. He'll do something on Friday, and then he will be in a theater on Saturday with some amazing music as he wows us. It's almost going to be kind of like a EDM super experience, but
it's
in a seat.
Like performance art.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a rave.
It's going to be a rave.
It's a rave.
Caroline's going to be DJing.
Yeah, I'm heading that up.
Yeah, speaking of artists, we also have an amazingly talented artist who his name is Eric Keyes, and he has been with The Simpsons since the inception of that show. He's been there for 20 years as a character designer. All those characters, in addition to Marge and Homer and all those folks, if you see a celebrity make a cameo appearance, more often than not, he is the one who's probably designed that or is part of that. And he also does just sort of characters who are in the periphery, because if you think about it, if you're an extra on The Simpsons, someone has to put the thought process behind designing someone for that scene and making them fit and not look out of place. Eric is an extremely talented artist who loves to doodle, loves to draw, loves to do wonderful work. And we have employed him as our resident cartoonist for Famous Monsters Magazine ever since issue 282. And it's wonderful to see, because he's got such a great sense of humor. And, if he can make Phil Kim laugh at anything that comes out of his mouth, then we've got some good material.
Yeah, no, he's pretty amazing. Like, when he calls, I'm like, all right, I'm having a bad day. I'm picking this up. Yeah. No, he's funny guy and just humble.
Oh, yeah. Very.
I've just never seen someone who's that accredited. So humble.
Yeah, you know, he should be. He should have a much more inflated ego. But
oh yeah, for sure.
But
he's like a Jedi artist.
Yeah, he's just super talented and super super chill about the whole thing. You know, I mean, in addition to The Simpsons, he's worked on King of the Hill, the show Recess. He's done a little work on Futurama as well. But he's gotten other projects going as well. With Famous Monsters, he's going to be putting a book together. This is no secret. We announced it at the last Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. That he is going to be doing kind of a children's book for adults based entirely on 1968 George Romero's Night of the Living Dead. You guys have seen the art for that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, George Romero and John Russo, I'd like to.
Yes, and John Russo.
That was in issue 280.
Well, it's a parody.
Was that 282?
That we
included that? Yeah, that we did, yeah. The one with Ash versus Evil Dead on the cover, Bruce Campbell, yes. That we did a little Stake of the Union recap. And it's funny, it seems like so long ago now, but that's where we first revealed Rick Baker's American Werewolf cover. And that's where we announced Eric as our cartoonist and a bunch of other wonderful things. Who else is going to be there at the event?
Well, my favorite producer in Hollywood, Kevin Burns.
Oh wow!
Of Prometheus Entertainment.
He's got a tremendous list of credits.
Oh
tremendous
yeah,
tremendous list of
yeah.
credits. What makes him? I mean, he's obviously the ultimate monster kid.
Yes.
And he's always been an amazing champion of Famous Monsters. What's kind of his connection? Is he going to be talking about Forey Ackerman?
Yes. Kevin Burns was the executor of Forey's estate. Mm-hmm. Forey trusted him so much. He's a very honorable guy, and so he administered his estate after Forey's passing. His, you know, credits are Girls Next Door,
Holly's World, yeah. Ancient Aliens is a big one.
Is his brainchild? Yeah.
I mean, he's produced a million different things, and he also is He's connected with the Erlen Allen estate.
Yes, he is the over at least a decade. Mm-hmm. He had been the administrator for the license.
Erlen Allen being the classic Hollywood producer who did everything from Lost in Space and The Time Tunnel and Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea to
Poseidon Adventure,
Land of the Giants,
and those major cataclysmic disaster porn,
The Towering Inferno.
Disaster porn started with Erlen Allen.
Oh, absolutely! I always love all of his disaster movies. It starts out with kind of like the tropes of like, this is so
a wonderful
great
party. How could I'm having the time of my life. What terrible things could happen to me? Oh, it's almost a stroke of midnight. How lucky for us.
It's like, oh, somebody lit a little match and I dropped a cigarette next to this wrapper. And
next thing you know, it's over. Well, all we could say is that Roland Emmerich, I think, owes a lot to
Oh, absolutely. Emmerich. He's the modern.
So Kevin's going to be there.
Kevin will be there, and he his primary visit would be to tell us about the Lost in Space franchise. And I don't know if I'm sure it's no secret at this point. I think it's been announced already that Legendary Pictures he brokered a deal with them to bring Lost in Space back. Kind of like
as a series,
Bring it back on Netflix, which is. You know, if you would have told me 5 years ago, hey, I'm bringing a series back on Netflix, I'd be like, so what? Now, I'm like, oh my goodness,
yeah,
Netflix, it's
thing.
Like
that's
HBO.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I think they did a great job finding a home for Lost in Space. Because, you know, with Netflix, you know they're going to have a little more freedom to kind of make it a little more dystopic.
And you also get your instant gratification. You can binge watch quite, right immediately, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, I've personally made amends with Netflix. I used to love Netflix and I champion Netflix. And then when they kind of had some growing pains when they divided between digitally and the mail. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
See,
yes.
they wisely, much like Jack in the Box reinvented themselves. They wisely reinvented themselves with their original programming being so stellar. And boy, they're such a network to watch now. I think they really give HBO, Showtime.
Oh yeah,
Stars. They all give each other a run for their money.
Yeah.
So Kevin's going to be there.
Kevin will be there, and then he'll also, Kevin will be talking about basically Erwin Allen Lost in Space because we have the exclusive license currently to publish Erwin Allen's basically a couple of scripts that never was produced.
Mm-hmm.
It would have either ended up in, I guess, season 4. And the scripts were written by Cary Wilbur. And if you don't know who Cary Wilbur is, look it up on IMDb and you will see. You will need not a wide screen, but a long screen. He was pretty much, he wrote on almost every show.
Tremendous.
Bonanza, resume. Big Valley, Rawhide, just on and on. Star Trek, he's famed really for the bringing in the original Star Trek, Khan into the canon.
Mm.
He wrote that. And Space Seed, I think is.
Yep, Space Seed.
Space Seed. And so. So anyway,
know Benedict Cumberbatch was born back then. Was he?
He is. He is timeless.
He's been alive forever.
Forever.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He's
all right.
My
ageless man.
He's a werewolf, right, Caroline?
he's just a god.
Werewolves age.
All right, people. I'm just kidding. I know that it was Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah, Ricardo Montalban. Yeah.
I was really waiting for someone to yell Khan.
Yeah.
I can't believe no one yelled Khan.
Khan! All right, there we go.
There we go.
We need George
you.
To participate.
Thank you.
Feel the love tonight. I think it's also very cool that Cinema Makeup School is going to be doing a demonstration as well. So we have Rob Pryor is going to be painting and Cinema Makeup School. Walter Welsh is going to be here, be at the Silver Screen Fest.
Yes. He is, and he's not just doing any makeup. He is doing a live werewolf transformation.
Oh,
what a coincidence.
Wait a minute. That's just, exactly, a coincidence. How did you luck out?
We didn't plan that at all.
How did you luck out that it would be a werewolf?
How much money did you pay him to do that?
Yes, it was all me, all out of pocket. I pulled this together.
Are you going to be transformed?
Oh my gosh, I wish. No, I don't work. No. But it will be very cool to watch. And for those of you who don't know, Walter Welsh is a participant on season 10 of Face Off. Mm-hmm. And he's also done multiple looks for Cinema Makeup School at San Diego Comic-Con at different conventions. I believe the last one he did was Apocalypse. That was SDCC 2015. He had a part in that. So it should be really, really fantastic. I'm so excited. I can't say that enough.
Are you excited?
I think I'm excited.
Okay. I think another exciting thing is, I mean, it's a film festival, and so there's going to be a lot of raw and original talent. George, I know you've been tirelessly going through a lot of wonderful, wonderful submissions, and a couple of things where I think you've had to sort of eat your vegetables, so to speak. Can you give a tease?
I want to first introduce George. George was the in essence, George was our doorman for this film festival. As the films came in, he had to process it and figure out who, which judges, our secret panel of judges, were going to be viewing it and so forth. So lots of credit due to George.
Yay, George.
Oh, wow. Okay, thank you.
I
said, go back to your cake. Box camera.
Cameron, you're not even on this podcast.
Cheers and jeers. So yeah, it sounds like you've sifted through a lot of stuff, and I mean I think anyone can sort of imagine that when you have anything from a extremely well known film fest to Sundance to anything running the spectrum, there's going to be a lot of submissions. Everyone has a film that they want to put in.
Doesn't even cover it, I feel.
And you know, the thing is, you know, the cream of the crop rises to the top, but the thing is, you still have to have someone who's got to determine what's good and what qualifies and what could be voted on and what really just sort of is not good for the festival to begin with. How is that process like for you?
It's
you look a little shell-shocked.
As someone who enjoys film since I was a child, and this is where I've been meant to be all my life, is with Famous Monsters, because this is a group of people who understands film and what it is to enjoy every aspect of it. But you don't understand the process until you're actually judging someone else's thing, and you know that they have to get into this competition, and they're putting their life's work into it. It's a whole other mindset you're getting into, honestly. And like, even the people who didn't make it, the amount of work they put in is obvious, and if you feel bad for not everyone who gets to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's difficult, you know? Because you point out very, very clearly, everyone, no matter what the result is, everyone tries hard.
Yeah. And it's there.
They believe in their own project. And some can't be as great as others. But I think, you know, I wonder if that's sort of an element that you look for, where if production value isn't so great necessarily, but there's some heart or there's some real talent behind what they were able to produce with.
Yeah, most definitely. Like it brought me back to when I was teaching, and I used to teach little kids on creative writing. And we always used to talk to each other after classes. And like, it's not about whether the kid can spell a word right or whatever, but did they get their idea out? Mm-hmm. Did they express themselves the way they were supposed to? You know, could you understand where they were coming from? And that's where it was a lot of these films, where it's like, okay, maybe the camera angling wasn't great. Maybe they're supposed to have an English accent, but they didn't get it on point. But you knew what they were trying to convict, whether it was with either it was fear or just like a new concept of science fiction. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was a lot of good ideas, I have to say. You know, especially some of the foreign films that we got in were just mind-blowing. Mm. Like, I was just so surprised. And it's like, these people have to come over to here and make our movies for us, you know?
Yeah, I just want to jump in. I mean, we're internationalists when we go out to eat, right? We don't have any barriers in our minds of culture.
It's all like, hey, I eat is Chinese food. I don't know what you're talking
okay,
about.
Okay, well, great. So, but you don't really think about, you know, what makes somebody in the Middle East fearful, or, you know, what their cultural lore, you know, folklores are. But then you start seeing, you know, it's, I think a perfect example is when Ringu, mm-hmm, or The Ring,
yeah,
came in.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, it's a ghost stories are a huge thing in Japan and in Asia, basically. And what freaks them out, you realize, is also like, hey, if I knew that that was supposed to be in our culture, I'd be freaked out too. So the nice thing about horror, unlike comedy, is it kind of transcends cultural boundaries, I think. It's a common language. Love and fear.
I think that's why I felt with the movies. It's like music. It has brought everyone together, you know, which is very nice.
So in addition to the wonderful submissions that we have sifted through and George and other folks at Famous Monsters have picked for you to view during the course of the weekend, we have some really cool films that are not in competition, and they're extremely well known. Some have panels connected with them, and some don't. But for every American Werewolf in London and Nightmare on Elm Street we have, or Dracula, we've got some cool things. Like we've got another Dracula film, the Hammer film, Dracula Has Risen from the Grave, the Christopher Lee film of the late Christopher Lee, and that's very cool. I think of all the things there. I mean, there's so many to see, but it's the 60th anniversary of Forbidden Planet, and we've got a screening of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, how often do you get to see that on the big screen? We also have one of the wonderful from Warner Archives. They're providing us with some pretty fun films, and they're going to come out with a favorite of everybody's that I think people didn't necessarily know was their favorite, and that's Ice Pirates.
Oh yeah, Robert Urich. Robert Urich.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that has to be seen to believe. And I was just going to say, if you look at the poster for that film alone, you can tell that the marketing team back in the 80s didn't quite know what they had on their hands.
No, it's true.
It's very fun.
Well, Robert Urich was Vegas, right?
Yeah.
Dun 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 dun. Dun, dun.
And that Vegas, and then he was Spencer for Hire.
Oh, right, so Spencer for Hire.
Yeah.
And then, but this was his crossover to cinema, and it was during the time when, like Road Warrior came out and Mad Max, and it became a big thing, and there was all of these dystopic future movies, and so I think it was one of those.
What on earth is this film about?
Ice Pirates? So, it has to be seen to believe.
So there are ice is rare in the future, and it's like the life. No, I don't know. I'm just kidding.
It's like the ice storm, but with lots of action
and pirates.
No, absolutely not. No, it's a very, very fun, whimsical film. It's definitely a product of his time that I think has to be. It's very amusing, but it's definitely something to appreciate. It's coming out on Blu-ray, and so Warner Archives is graciously giving us a print to watch on screen, giving us the movie to watch on the big screen.
It kind of looks like Mad Max meets Flash Gordon.
Yeah, it's exactly. That's what I was saying.
I see the look on your face, Caroline, and I could see the wheels turning. I could see that you're like,
putting this together in my brain.
Wait a minute.
I'm excited.
Well, look.
Are there any werewolves in this movie?
Maybe.
Okay.
There's ice wolves.
Oh, well. All right, I'm down.
No, I know we're kind of being a little slapstick about it, but that was the movie was very lighthearted. It was like Buckaroo Banzai. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, and surprisingly, if you watch it, it's actually good.
Oh, it's very entertaining.
Yeah, it's very
good. Definitely no Plan 9 from outer space.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's got production value, and if you were watching it in the 80s, it may have even wowed you with their special effects. But I mean, today it's obviously
Speaking of Plan 9 from Outer Space, what's pretty cool is that we're not only showing Dracula because it's the 85th anniversary, and we've got Bela Lugosi Jr. there. We're showing some other wonderful Bela Lugosi movies. We're showing White Zombie. We're showing Island of Lost Souls, which is the precursor to the Island of Dr. Moreau. We're showing Son of Frankenstein. It's amazing.
It's Frankenstein.
You mispronounced it. So, how often do you get to see these movies on the big screen? I think that is real fun, and I think what we're trying to foster at this event is a sense of excitement about, it's not necessarily new, but a lot of old stuff as well that I think everyone appreciates and rarely gets to see on the big screen. And I'm very excited for the palpable energy of the audiences as they get to sit down and watch this stuff. Another movie that's on there that we get a little weird too, and Santa Sangre is going to
speak for yourself.
Well, maybe it's normal for you, but the Jodorowsky film Santa Sangre is in there in our roster, as well as I'm looking through the list here. We've got Patrick.
Ooh. Does anybody remember Patrick?
Yeah, that's a disturbing film. It's very low-budget.
It's literally, it was Paranormal Activity before Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
It was literally a guy in a hospital bed.
His name was Patrick.
His name was Patrick. And he had psychokinesis. And he could lift and move things. And, you know, there was a lot of mayhem with 70s nurses with, you know, a little too short a skirt. You know, it was very.
That worked for me in that movie. That was pretty good. Some of the other stuff we're going to be showing, again, it's the end of the podcast, and I can't put two words together.
David's slurring his words.
I know. Jack Pierce, the maker of Monsters, a documentary about the great makeup artist, Jack Pierce. And there's going to be some Forey stuff as well. It's more like a very cool home movie, but for Uncle Forey's Acker Mansions is an opportunity to take a tour of the fabled Acker Mansion that Forey, you know, for those who don't know Forey Ackerman very well, other than the magazine that he published, Famous Monsters, he was the ultimate collector. And he collected everything, and everyone gave him everything. And so his mansion, his what was it, 18 rooms at one point
before
he got to smaller digs, they were lined wall to wall with books, with props, armatures from King Kong,
the original armature.
Oh, yeah. You know, the pterodactyl from King Kong. He had was the cape that he had from Bela Lugosi, was that from Plan 9 from Outer Space?
It was. Or it was actually a black cat. It was not the 1931 cape.
It's not the 1931 Dracula cape, but we got to get our story straight. Since we're famous monsters, we should know better. But that
he had the ring.
Yes.
He had the 1931 ring.
He had the original ring, yep.
Yeah. Well, Forey Ackerman represented Ed Wood at one point, so that's why I think it's the Plan 9 connection.
Yeah. Well, Forey Ackerman represented pretty much everybody who was in science fiction and
Ray Bradbury.
Yeah. L. Ron Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, we don't talk about that.
Well, L. Ron Hubbard was a sci-fi writer before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before things changed.
Yeah. Well, so. I mean, you know, the thing is, you know, religion does weird things to people. So.
All right. Moving on from Scientology, make your own decisions. We're not pushing any agendas.
Absolutely.
We welcome all.
Absolutely.
We welcome all horror.
Yep.
Also, what's cool is because we have Heather Langenkamp in the house for that weekend.
Yeah.
Friday night, she's going to be talking about Nightmare on Elm Street and New Nightmare and Wes Craven and her wonderful memories. She actually wrote a wonderful piece for us when Wes Craven passed away in Famous Monsters number 282, talking about how important and influential Wes was for her. And she put together a wonderful documentary called I Am Nancy. And that's just examining the fandom that surrounds Nightmare on Elm Street and Freddy Krueger and her character Nancy. And why is Freddy the more popular character than Nancy? Because Nancy is, in essence, the hero of the film. And so she kind of dives into that and dissects that while going from convention to convention with Robert Englund and talking to fans and seeing the depths of that. I know people, it starts out with her talking to fans who are getting, you know, a Freddy Krueger tattoo. And she wonders why people are so dedicated to such a character. So she's going to be there for two nights talking about Nightmare on Elm Street. And then on Sunday, she's going to screen that and have a panel to talk about it some more.
Yep. I can't wait. I mean, I grew up on these movies and kind of hang out with Nancy. That's and Mr. Krueger.
They're all very cool. Mr. Krueger, Nancy, Heather Langenkamp, and Robert Englund, and David Naughton are all going to be signing. I believe it's on Saturday. They're going to have a period of time where they're going to be signing autographs for fans. So make sure you bring one item to be signed, and it's going to be very exciting that they're going to be there to talk to the fans and meet the fans. And I think what makes this entire event extraordinary is not only are so many of these wonderful talented artists coming up to Santa Rosa, but it's going to be an intimate affair. These aren't giant theaters. They're very intimate. They're small. I mean, there's a couple different sized ones, so it's a bit sizable for some of the larger events, so we can fit in as many people as possible.
But it's still pretty intimate. I mean, it's you know, the biggest theater is 400 seats, and the smallest theater is 150. So it's not a lot of people, if you know. But we have multiple screens going, so you can get. There are plenty things to do.
And we're also arranging it where if you want to see American Werewolf in London and see the folks talk about that, but you also want to see Nightmare on Elm Street and see those folks talk about that, both Friday night and Saturday night, we're going to be doing the same arrangement. So on Friday night, you could do American Werewolf, and Saturday night, you could do Nightmare on Elm Street, or you could flip it around.
Absolutely.
And so it's designed to try and be as inclusive as possible. And you can go to silverscreenfest.com for all the details. You can get passes, a three-day pass. You can get individual day passes. It's at the Roxy Stadium 14 in Santa Rosa, California. Why in Santa Rosa?
Well, Santa Rosa, because that's where Neil's theater is.
Well, then.
That's straight to the point.
Aren't you from Santa Rosa? That's sort of what I'm getting at.
Yes.
I'm sort of leading the question, but apparently you don't want to respond.
No, I am a Santa Rosa resident. I've been there for a long time, and
Well, there you go. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We're very, very excited about this. We put in a lot of hard work. We think it's going to be a really exciting event. There's lots going on. There's lots of people going. There's lots of important people who are going to be going. And it's an opportunity to see some great movies, some great genre films, to hear people talk about wonderful, wonderful projects, and to possibly rub elbows with some of Hollywood while you're drinking wine. And again, go to silverscreenfest.com. And for all of us at Famous Monsters, we hope to see you up there. Most of us are going to be up there, and we're happy to talk to you. Caroline, I know we're big on social media. We'd love to interact with you. Where should we go?
Absolutely. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/FMOFL. We are on Twitter and Instagram at FMOF. And we're definitely, if you guys can't make it out to the event, we're going to be periscoping it. That's at Famous Monsters. And we'll also be, you know, live tweeting, posting pictures, posting video. So nobody's going to miss out on the big event.
So if you enjoyed this podcast and you love Famous Monsters, tell a friend. Also, please spread the word about the Silver Screen Fest, because we're pretty excited about it. So we want you to be able to come, or at least recommend it to people who might be able to come. If you love Famous Monsters magazine, if you love our comics, please spread the word and make sure to incorporate horror, sci-fi, fantasy, and genre pop culture into your conversations to ensure generations of monster kids to come. Mm-hmm. And so until next time, let's stay scary.
The Famous Monsters Podcast is copyright Famous Monsters and Movieland Classics, LLC. All rights reserved. Sonoma County, drink it in. Wine, Wilderness, and Wes Craven. Wait, what? Brace yourself, for Famous Monsters of Filmland and the Santa Rosa Entertainment Group present the Silver Scream Film and Comic Festival. Coming to Santa Rosa, March 4th, 5th, and 6th, 2016, the stars of Horrorwood will be in attendance, and they're thirsty for more than just wine. Come celebrate the 35th anniversary of an American Werewolf in London. Enjoy a tribute to Wes Craven. Witness a live makeup demonstration by the Cinema Makeup School, and that's just for starters. With special guests John Landis, Rick Baker, Robert Englund, Heather Langenkamp, David Naughton, Kevin Burns, Rob Pryor, Eric Keyes, Derek Robertson, and many more. For tickets and information, visit SilverScreenFest.com. We're dying to see you there.